We're making it easier to listen to the Voice America Talk Radio Network live wherever you go on iPhone, BlackBerry, or Android. Download it from the Apple iTunes App Store, BlackBerry App World, or Android Market.
Welcome to Real Recognition Radio, a program designed to promote a positive work environment. Your hosts are Roy Saunderson and S. Max Brown. In this hour, you will be motivated to motivate, increase morale, productivity, loyalty, and reduce turnover. Learn how some companies get it while others don't. Now, here are your hosts, Roy and Max.
Welcome to Real Recognition Radio. The show is all about building relationships, inspiring greatness, and creating a workplace where people can thrive. I'm Roy Saunderson, along with my colleague Max Brown, and we're from the Recognition Management Institute. How's it going for you today, Max?
Things are great, Roy. I'm looking forward to another good show, as we've had so many wonderful shows every single week. This is just another fun one.
No kidding, and you won't believe it. Today is actually March 1st, World Compliment Day, heralded as the most positive day in the whole world. And we're actually just so pleased to be able to begin our program with Hans Poortvliet from the Netherlands, who is championing the whole concept behind World Compliment Day. And he's going to tell us some more about this wonderful opportunity. Hans is the managing director of the Hospitality Sales and Marketing Association International, and he's the owner and founder of Vardering's Management and is one of the few certified recognition professionals in Europe. In 2003, Hans introduced the whole concept of National Compliment Day in the Netherlands, and it's been held annually on March 1st ever since. And the social aspect of this initiative attracts worldwide media interest year after year and was followed by AO Belgium in 2010 and also in Norway. And in October 2010, Poortvliet successfully organized the first Recognition Management Conference in the Netherlands, after which he initiated the whole idea of a World Compliment Day to be held yearly as of March 1st. Welcome to the show, Hans.
Well, thank you for this wonderful introduction.
You're welcome. Who caught it, MA?
Yeah, and it's amazing how you pronounce my name well, and actually all the Dutch words you mentioned.
Well, I must confess I was in Belgium for a couple of years, so I learned the Flemish side of the Dutch. So, but if you don't practice it, you lose it, right?
Yes, well, absolutely. But so far, so good, I would say. Thank you.
Thank you, Hans. well, listen, tell us about the origins of World Compliment Day. We're excited to be a part of this. And what drove you to create this day?
Well, the thing was that what happened is that I was looking up something on recognition, and I figured, well, then I have to look at compliment.nl, which is the extension we use here in the Netherlands for internet.
Mm-hmm.
And there was this, like, you know, this remark, like, didn't exist, or anyway, I couldn't get the page, so I just checked what was going on. And I found that this was about 10 years ago. I found out that the domain or the URL was still available, and I thought, this is crazy because it's so important. I mean, people leave their jobs because they don't get the recognition.
Right.
And then I checked some other names, and then obviously they were all still available, while basically all names were gone already. So that was kind of a surprise to me, and I figured, well, I just might as well, have these domain names, keep them, and see what I can do with it. And then I started doing a little investigation, and I just figured, well, there's not many people working with compliments in the country. And again, it's just one of those things that make people go and make people happy, so I figured, well, maybe we should start a compliment day, and that's how it came about.
Well, good for you. And on the World Compliment Day website, it says nobody wins commercially, but everybody gains emotionally. That's powerful. How do you recommend people put this into action, Hans?
Well, I have a lot of interviews going on today, which is nice, and it is one from you from the U.S. and the rest in Holland, and there's one maybe from Australia still. And basically, the question is like what you just mentioned to me. It's like, how do you do it? I think, first of all, people should just do it their own, especially their own way. I mean, just don't do anything forceful. I mean, it should be very, very natural. And just think of someone in your neighborhood, in your family, in your job, or maybe both, who is always there for you, and you think, well, maybe I don't say it enough, and just pay them a sincere compliment in your own words.
Well,
and I think if people do that, hopefully worldwide as of this year, and of course this will not happen in 1 year. In Holland, it took a couple of years to get really big as well. But it has all the things we can have there we need for a really most positive day of the world. I mean, if everybody talks about what's going right for one day, I think we have a chance.
Absolutely. We certainly agree with you, Hans. Now, you've also said that a sincere and personal compliment costs nothing, but the impact on the recipient is huge. Nothing stimulates more, gives more energy, and as far as business is concerned, increases productivity and commitment faster than sincere appreciation. With that said, Hans, why do you think compliments are such a rare experience in the workplace?
Well, Roy, I wish I had the answer. I mean, if you see what a compliment, a sincere compliment, does with people, it's and you just mentioned all the advantages it has. It doesn't cost you anything, and there's hardly anything that has more impact on the mood, on the engagement of people, involvement, or whatever you would like to see happening on your work floor. And it's a miracle. It's a missed chance, a missed opportunity, I think, not to use it more than we do nowadays. And why is it? I don't know why people don't do it and why don't use it. It depends a little bit maybe also on the culture, but in essence, again, it's just a mystery to me. It's the most effective thing we have as a human person, a human being, to work with other people. And somehow we try to buy it, loyalty or whatever, but the one thing that really makes a difference, we don't use very often.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's funny, as I traveled across Europe a couple of years ago, certainly there was a very strong cultural difference across the various European countries. Do you see that in your travels as well, that some countries seem to have a harder time or an easier time of giving compliments than others?
Well, yes, as a matter of fact, very often the United States is used as an example of where people are more accustomed to doing it. Although, when you're there, you hear the same sounds, people are like, well, I wish I had a little more appreciation for what I do than I do now. But
right.
If I look in Holland, we have, you know, the Calvinism as such, and where people say, well, you know, you should not be too proud of what you do and things like that. And so if you give a compliment, they say, well, you know, it's normal and don't bother and don't mention it. Or if it's about a coat, they say, well, you know, it was for sale. I mean, they always put it down, and it's just a mistake. It's just a pity because, you know, you take away something that someone would like to give you as a present, basically. And that's one of the things I'll tell people here too. You know, the only thing you have to say is thank you, and then that's the shortest lesson we can give, and it's the most effective one, I think.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Now, as you've been kind of exploring this, getting this all off the ground here with World Compliment Day, on, tell me, what has been some of the reactions you've been getting from different leaders, different people you've been reaching out to?
Well, the idea, everybody that hears about it likes the idea, but that's one thing. You know, the second thing that hopefully is going to happen tomorrow is that people are starting giving out those compliments and do what they say they are going to do. And like I said, it's not going to be a huge success first year, I'm sure, because it needs to land, and it will take a couple of years. But let's see what happens tomorrow if we go on the internet and Google, see where the tweets go and things like that. And like I said, with the things, especially nowadays, going on in the world, I mean, with political and the things in Libya and everything, there's so much negative news going around, and we should not ignore that. But let's also look maybe one day a little bit more to what's going right and just express our sincere appreciation for someone in our environment. So let's hope that's going to start as of tomorrow.
So Hans, I have to admit, you know, being with you last October at the first organizational conference on recognition management, we had a lot of fun together, and I was grateful I was able to speak at that conference with you that day. A lot of fun. You're talking now about World Compliment Day setting itself apart from, for instance, other holidays, in that you don't want it to be commercial. Can you talk to us about that a bit?
Absolutely. Yeah, one of the things is that we say, you know, compliments shouldn't cost or doesn't have to cost anything at all. And maybe we should use that as a start for this day where we say, and it's not against Valentine's or Secretary's Day or Mother's Day, we're not against it, but we say you're not supposed to buy anything on National Compliment Day or World Compliment Day. Just do it with words. And for a lot of people, unfortunately, that's harder to do than maybe buy a present for whoever, because you can easily give that, but now you have to use your emotion and talk from heart to heart. Yeah. And that's the challenge, and that's also what makes it so powerful.
Yeah. Well, that's great, and I think we need to kind of be doing more of this, and both not just even in the workplace, at home and in our communities as well.
Everywhere it works. It's one of those primary needs that people have. You know, it's not a trend or a temporary thing. It has never been different. People always needed the attention, and they will always, as a person, need attention. And somehow we just don't see that enough, or don't give it enough time, or thinking about it. It's just like, again, it's a big mistake not to get a little bit more time and focus on this. Absolutely.
Great. Well, listen, Hans, this initiative I know is being backed by Recognition Professionals International in North America and MasterPeace.org. What other ways are you getting the word out about World Compliment Day?
Well, actually, we're focusing and aiming on especially the power of Twitter and Facebook, and so we try to reach people through those channels. And then, of course, here we have in Holland a lot of people following us on the National Compliment Day, so we inform them as well and ask them to forward the message to their people in their respective network and if possible, countries abroad. And I think, like you mentioned in the beginning, Belgium is now fully equipped and working on it for the second year in a row, and they're going to come out with a new website tonight where they will also tell about the developments going on here. And so we just have to build on the networks and people hearing about it and taking the effort just to write a small short note to someone on the Internet and mentioning it, and that's the way we build it over here, and that's the way we hope to build it worldwide.
Wonderful. Well, listen, Hans, we've got 1 minute left. Can you tell us, for our audience, how they can learn more about World Compliment Day? Give us the kind of URL and information that we can do to find out and participate in this.
Okay, well, last minute. Then let me just say that the website where you can find more information about it is, I think you say, www.worldcomplimentday.com. And there's where you find all the information and where you can participate and also see how your tweets end up being seen globally. And if I may end with one quote from, I think it's Zig Ziglar, who said, you know, in this world there's about 4 billion people, no, there's 2 billion people that go to bed hungry at night, and there's not that much we can do as a person, but there are about 4 billion people going to bed at night wanted to have some nice words or a little appreciation that day, and I think that is something that we can work on, and this is what we aim for with World Compliment Day.
Mm. Well, that's certainly a very powerful ending point there, Hans, and may we pay you a compliment and thank you for initiating this whole concept behind World Compliment Day. Let's all take the initiative together for all of our listeners in making this a special day and giving compliments all around, at our workplace, at home, wherever we're associated with people. Let's be on the lookout for ways in which we can give the compliments more successfully. Hans, thank you so much for being on our show today.
Thank you so much, Roy, Max, and Laura. You, good luck with your interview later on. Thank you, and have a great day.
Thank you so much.
Okay, take care. Bye-bye.
Take care, Hans. Bye-bye now. Well, it's time for us to take a short break. I'm Roy Saunderson and Max Brown. And when we return, we'll be speaking with Laura Goodrich, author of Seeing Red Cars. You're listening to Real Recognition Radio on the Voice America Business Channel. Please stay tuned.
Be sure to friend us on Facebook. You can do it right now. Visit facebook.com/Voice America or search for us at keyword Voice America.
How do you become one of the best companies to work for? By appreciating people for who they are and recognizing them for what they do. That's real recognition. 82% of employees say that recognition or praise they receive at work motivates them to improve their performance. And companies who recognize their people outperform companies that don't by 30 to 40%. Those are real results. Become one of the best companies to work for. The Recognition Management Institute can help you get the results you need. For more information, visit realrecognition.com. That's realrecognition.com.
Relationships are the core of great businesses. Your employees are critical to the success of your business. Rideau helps you build positive relationships with your people. Rideau helps you inspire greatness in your people. We do it through the power of recognition and rewards. Rideau's clients are Intel, RBC Financial, Boeing, and Liberty Mutual. We're committed to our clients and our people. Together, Rideau and our clients create better workplaces, better businesses, and ultimately, a better world. Become a Rideau client. Find us at rideau.com. Rideau is the proud sponsor of Real Recognition Radio. Stocks, bonds, investment opportunities, financial news, and talk. We can help. Call us now toll-free, 866-472-5790. 866-472-5790. Voice America Business Network.
You're listening to Real Recognition Radio with Roy Saunderson and S. Max Brown. This is what recognition is all about, getting real results in the workplace through meaningful recognition solutions. Now, let's get back to the program. Here are Roy and Max.
Welcome back to Real Recognition Radio with my colleague Roy Saunderson and myself, Max Brown. And, of course, as we just talked with Hans on World Compliment Day, grateful to have him on the show today, Roy. And now to take it further, talking with Laura Goodrich, co-founder of On Impact and the author of Seeing Red Cars, as you introduced her earlier before we took that break. I'm excited because Laura is an internationally recognized expert in the field of workplace dynamics and relationships. Her business stories and experience from all over the globe have earned her the reputation as someone who can assist others in creating positive business relationships. Boy, that sounds like something we're trying to do on our show, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. She's recognized as a riveting speaker. Her knowledge of workplace dynamics, as we mentioned, along with her style and upbeat personality to communicate and connect with audiences, makes her presentations practical, motivational, and truly memorable. She is the co-owner of On Impact Productions, an integrated content company which specializes in authoring and producing videos, documentaries, television series, speaking, coaching, and consulting that is dedicated to having a powerful and positive impact on the lives and life skills of those people with which she works. So, Laura, thank you for being on the show, and welcome.
Well, thank you for the lovely introduction. I'm happy to be here.
Well, we're glad you're here as well. And for those who haven't heard or had a chance yet to see or learn about Seeing Red Cars, the movie, can you explain the phenomenon and why you're referring to it for our audience?
Absolutely. As you were describing my work, I've spent the last 17 years really working with individuals and teams that are going through significant change. And when I begin working with them, I ask them, what do you want? I mean, really, what do you want to have happen here? Mm-hmm. And without a moment's hesitation, they would begin talking about everything that they were hoping to avoid, the things that they didn't want to have happen. It became really clear that they were focused on what they didn't want to have happen. And I always tell people, you get more of whatever it is you focus on, so you better be clear about what you do want. And it's kind of like you buy a red car, you pull out of the parking lot, and you think, I'm the only person with a red car. But the reality is that once you pull out of that parking lot, you begin noticing red cars everywhere. Mm-hmm. It's as if they are coming out of the woodwork, if you will. And that's really the concept in a nutshell, is that we want to be focusing on the outcomes that we're looking for in situations large and small. And having worked with many organizations going through transition, I came to recognize this unconscious focus on what we want to avoid, on what we fear, is even more prevalent during times of change like we live in today.
Why do you think that is? Why is it so easy to focus on the things we fear or the things we want to avoid?
You know, I'm really glad that you asked that question, because it's an interesting piece. When I made the film, and the film has been internationally distributed for a couple of years and has done very well, when I made the film, I could clearly identify and tell you that it happened, that we have an unconscious focus. I have had the experience of seeing organizations or teams that have turned that unconscious focus around. I've seen the benefit. I've also seen the cascading effect of that negative focus. I understood that. And that's what the film was about. What I didn't understand is why. Why does it happen? Because it just plain doesn't make sense. We all know that focusing on winning a game is the thought process we need to have as we begin playing a game. We all know that a race car driver is going to focus on the track, not the, you know, not the fence that they want to avoid. So it really doesn't make sense. And that was really exciting to be able to dig into and ask that question, what causes this to happen? And I leaned on the field of neuroscience. And a number of folks I'd had the privilege and opportunity to work with, and I simply asked that question, why does it happen? Dr. Ellen Weber is one of the folks that I've had the privilege of collaborating with, and she began to explain it's really a process of social conditioning, which begins with well-intentioned parents. Don't run, don't fall, don't get hurt. What the intention is to help their children avoid injury or pain or even embarrassment. That's where it starts. It's perpetuated in the school environment and with well-intentioned folks around us trying to protect us from getting hurt. We begin forging pathways in our brain, and they are, you know, reoccurring because we have reoccurring thought processes. So they've been there for a long, long time, and they've actually been reinforced for a long time and often are reinforced by the people that we choose to be around.
Yeah, so you've got me reflecting because just recently, despite multiple attempts by my good wife and I to tell our kids, please don't stand up in your chair because you will fall, it happened. And my daughter skinned her nose and she got all upset. And we were like, honey, this is why we ask you, please don't stand in your chair. So I appreciate the social conditioning happens, but I'm wondering, what can we do in these circumstances, because here I find myself setting those expectations, even myself, but it really is because I've seen the consequences of where she's headed otherwise.
So that's a really important piece. Imagine that you slide to the other end of that statement, don't stand up because you'll fall and get hurt, and look at the polar opposite of that is sit nicely so that you're safe.
We've said that, and then you know they still get up, and I say, now listen, this is to show you the consequences. So sometimes I'll even pick my child up and show them, like, see how this could hurt if you fall. So I want you to sit here because if you're sitting, then you're good.
Right, it's a very difficult thing. Let me tell you what. The last thing I would ever say is this is an easy transition. The last thing that I would ever say is that it's natural, and at some point you will get to the place where you will absolutely, under all circumstances, focus on the outcomes that you're looking for.
Sure.
Because definitely comes into play. But what we want to do is to create targets that actually people can move toward.
Okay.
And particularly with kids, when we do that fear-based coaching, they are in the midst of the mistake before they recognize that they're doing it. Do you see what I'm saying? Right? So, you know, the condition, you know, don't stand up. Well, she's in the middle of standing before she recognizes that she's doing it. So here's an example. I had someone that approached me after speaking recently and said, Laura, I sent my son to school, and I said, don't run in gym class. Don't stand next to Joey because you know he has a very bad influence on your behavior, and don't do this also. It was the last thing that she said to him, and she said, as I listened to you speak, I recognize I have not given him a target by which to guide his behaviors. What I've given him something is that the only way that he's going to know that he's in it is when he is in it. He's making those mistakes. He's actually standing next to David, and they are, you know, sort of, you know, behaving in a way that's going to be problematic. So that was really the takeaway for her, is that target. I want to give them a target in which they can, you know, absolutely get their heads around and can guide their behavior. Now, we can get back to that and say, well, gosh, you know, maybe they just need to know that they're going to get really hurt in order to, you know, to create that environment. And I will offer, even at a very, very young age, we can begin that deeper coaching where we say, sit down so you're safe. What are the things that you need to do to remind you to sit in that way, because I know that it's kind of, you know, it's a better vantage point to be standing in a high chair than to be sitting in it. I get to sort of feel like I'm in control. But begin to ask those deeper coaching questions, even of a child, so that they can be thinking their way through it and coming up with their own strategy to help them keep on track.
Sure. Well, and good examples. You know, we were both curious as we looked and read your book about this person you dedicated the book to, and that's Joel Suzuki. Can you tell us a little bit more about how he inspired you? Why did he inspire you in writing this concept about seeing red cars?
Well, it's interesting because the whole process of preparing for writing a film is an interesting one, you know, in and of itself. Because unlike a book where you're writing, you know, 40,000 words or 60,000 words or what have you, you have a very limited number of words that you're bringing across in the type of films that we create because they're, you know, 15 minutes or less. And so you have to be very careful with that process. So we have, our strategic partner is a company that's called Star Thrower, and Joel Suzuki was one of the founders of that organization. And I went into him to begin with and explained this experience that I'd had in working with clients and really spoke to him about the fact that this is accelerated, this natural tendency is accelerated given the type of environment that we live in. And he said, "You're right. I see it all the time. I see it in my organization and the civic involvement that I have. I see it." And we began sitting down in our processes, identifying stories. It's a very collaborative process. So we, you know, we're in there writing together, and Joel is an excellent writer. And we'd put together and piece together all these stories, but we had not come up with a name. So we were actually really, really far down the road in terms of producing. And we were coming up with these bland, boring names, and we just were, you know, knocking our heads against the wall, not coming up with anything that was catchy or anything that was meaningful. And the point that I kept saying is that this had best be catchy, because if it's not, again, we're talking about unconscious behavior. So this is going to just sort of slip through the cracks if we don't make this a really, really catchy sort of thing that will create awareness for people in different ways. And we sort of closed that meeting unsuccessful, and we sat down, and Joel said, "This is what we're going to call this film, Seeing Red Cars." And we all immediately knew what he was talking about. Joel was a sage, just a sage wisdom man with just sage wisdom, an incredible mentor to me. And so when you talk about, I'm sure that both of you had that experience of someone in your life that saw your vision when others didn't, that recognized the value in it when others were not quite getting it. Joel was that man, truly just a wonderful human being, and I loved collaborating with him. And as you can hear, as I'm saying that in past tense, because as we were planning and writing our second film, he sent a note to us one day that he was experiencing flank pain and was diagnosed with cancer and was gone within 90 days. Just a really, I mean, it's just still always a really hard thing. But when I was writing the book, I knew for certain that I would dedicate it to him. Not only that he came up with the name for the film, and it was exactly what we had said we want to do. We want this to be catchy, and we want for people to have cues around them that will sort of bring them back, jog their memory back to the outcomes that they do want. He wanted that to be the case, but also because he was one of those people that just, you know, believed in me, believed in On Impact, my company, and you never forget someone like that. You never do.
Wow. Well, Laura, I really appreciate that you would share that story with us, and why don't we take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll continue the conversation around this content and more about how we can focus on the positive and what we're looking for in these outbase. These goals you say, as opposed to just the negative or the things we lack. I really appreciate this conversation so far. So thank you so much.
Absolutely.
We're going to take the quick break, but join us in a few minutes on Real Recognition Radio as we continue with Laura Goodrich, more about driving yourself, your team, and your organization to a positive future. For Real Recognition Radio, this is Max Brown and Roy Saunderson, and we'll be right back.
Find out what's happening on the Voice America Talk Radio Network by keeping up with us on Twitter. You can find us at Voice America TRN.
How do you become one of the best companies to work for? By appreciating people for who they are and recognizing them for what they do. That's real recognition. 82% of employees say that recognition or praise they receive at work motivates them to improve their performance. And companies who recognize their people outperform companies that don't by 30 to 40%. Those are real results. Become one of the best companies to work for. The Recognition Management Institute can help you get the results you need. For more information, visit realrecognition.com. That's realrecognition.com.
The next generation of employees is more sophisticated about recognition. They want to make a difference to their organizations, to their environment, and to their world. Rideau offers a full suite of recognition and reward solutions tailored to meet our clients' needs strategically, technologically, and globally. Rideau's clients are Intel, RBC Financial, Boeing, and Liberty Mutual. Together, Rideau and our clients create better workplaces, better businesses, and ultimately, a better world. Become a Rideau client. Find us at rideau.com. Rideau is the proud sponsor of Real Recognition Radio. Whether the market's up or down, or if you're looking to improve your portfolio, our experts are ready to talk to you. Call now. Toll free, 866-472-5790. That's 866-472-5790. Voice America Business Network.
You're listening to Real Recognition Radio with Roy Saunderson and S. Max Brown. This is what recognition is all about, getting real results in the workplace through meaningful recognition solutions. Now, let's get back to the program. Here are Roy and Max.
Welcome back to Real Recognition Radio. Myself, Roy Saunderson, and Max Brown, with our guest today, Laura Goodrich, the author of Seeing Red Cars, driving yourself, your team, and your organization to a positive future. Now, I'm curious, Laura, as I heard you share the whole origins behind Seeing Red Cars, and you talk about this very much from a personal side of things, but what will it mean to organizations, if employees get kind of fully involved, fully focused, engaged, aligned with the vision attributes and everything? What's it making? What have you found is making a difference in organizations with this whole new focus?
Well, as I mentioned to you before, I've had the opportunity in this unique place that I have as I work with teams when they're experiencing change. I have the opportunity to view both the negative and the positive side of this of unconscious focus.
Mm-hmm.
So I've seen that cascading effect where someone steps into a meeting and they're, the person across the table has that fear-based focus, and the individual that's communicating begins to backpedal because the look on the face of the person across from them does not look like they're embracing what they have to say. And once you find yourself in that place, you see this cascading effect that can really come into play. So an example that I like to share is that I had a client that contacted me, and he was leading this project, and it was one of those the stakes are high kind of projects, and he was really interested in being successful. And I like to share this story because it really illustrates how when we can have a focus on positive outcomes and this unconscious focus can sort of seep into our communication without our realizing it. This individual wanted more than anything to be successful with the project. Mm-hmm. He had been involved in other projects that had been unsuccessful, and he'd been very, very good at going and having conversations with people and learning about what caused their projects to hit roadblocks, for lack of a better word. So he had done that work, so he started this project. He had a great deal of clarity about what he didn't want to happen, mm-hmm. and he'd gotten locked into that. So he called me, and this project was literally blowing up on every single angle that you could imagine. They were over budget. The team dynamics were off. He told me that when he was walking down the hallway, if he saw a team member, they would divert their vision, away from him, like they'd see him, and they'd do a quick, about face.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, that something's not going well when people are absolutely trying to avoid eye contact.
Avoid you, yeah.
Right? that's clear example that something, you know, is not going well. And then when he brought them together in team meetings, he had a lot of truancy where they wouldn't even make it to meetings, or if they did come, there was a distraction. Almost everything was going wrong. We made the decision that I would work with him. I would shadow him for a day, and we'd spend some time. I would just, you know, observing the dynamics. And I did. I was there for his one-on-ones. I went to a couple of small meetings, some large gatherings, and it was immediately clear what he was doing. He had a tremendous clarity around what he was hoping to avoid, and he would either articulate it or it would show in his body language. We don't want to go over budget. We don't want to seem cooperative. We don't want to lack productivity. I mean, he used the language very regularly. And mm-hmm. as I saw him communicating with his team, I could see kind of this spirit just getting sucked out of them. I mean, you could see, and I knew that they were all working really hard. They were putting in a lot of hours, or they had been prior to this things coming undone. But it was inadvertently kind of sucking the energy out of them. So I explained to him the whole concept of red cars, and he said, wow, you know, I didn't really think about this, but it makes real sense. And so he put the cards right out on the table. He sat down with his team, and he said, here's a realization that I have. Here's what I've been doing, and I recognize that this is probably really frustrating you, particularly since you are working so hard and you're forfeiting some of your own personal time for the sake of this project. And I want to let you know that I'm really committed to focusing on the outcomes that we want, not only for this project, but also on this team. And he took the time to figure out together, for them to figure out what are the outcomes that we do want. And individually, he helped each of the team members identify their core strengths and how those core strengths would lend to accomplishing the objectives, and was able to turn that energy around in the team process. So that's an example. I hope that answers your question.
Mm-hmm.
What might it mean to a team if you're there together, you're linking arms with your colleagues? So now imagine if everyone has this language, the red cars conversation, and someone slips back into that natural tendency. You now have a team of individuals around you to say, well, what do we want? We're experiencing red cars. What do we want here just to get back on track?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, obviously, when you bring forward new ideas or there's a new direction with the business, often in workplaces, there's always going to be those who are the people who take away from things. They take away from the positive. They focus on the negative. How do you recommend that leaders, managers, or even just those who are the spark behind the ideas, how do you recommend that they deal with those who detract from what you want?
I'm really glad that you brought that up, because I would have to say that this is, you know, one of the most important points with the book, because at some point when we begin this conversation, people see themselves in it.
Mm-hmm.
Even if, like the example that I gave, this is an individual that said he wanted, absolutely wanted a positive outcome on his project, and this natural tendency snuck in there. About at that point, people go, I see myself here. I know that there is a place, or there are places, where I'm focusing on what I don't want, and that's actually getting it, you know, it's actually getting in the way.
Mm-hmm.
So at that moment, when people have that realization, the first thing that they do is conjure up an image of someone that has this focus to a really high degree. And they begin thinking, well, what I need to do is call Kathy up, because she does this a lot. And I need to let Kathy know about this so that she can make that change. The reality is that Kathy isn't interested. Kathy isn't ready. And Kathy is one of those individuals you talked about that is reactionary, has a tendency. So I want to throw these numbers out here, because these are numbers that we work with a tremendous amount when we're working with teams and organizations.
Mm-hmm.
When we're in this place of new information, 20% will look at that information and say, you're absolutely right. I've been thinking this for a long time. This has been a part of my thought process. I want to be a part of this. They mm-hmm. get it, they see it, and they immediately see the value of it. 50% are sort of sitting on the fence and not quite sure. Well, we'll see. They're a little bit cautious, but they don't have a really strong opinion one way or the other. And 30% are the henny-penny, the sky is falling, the world is going to meet its demise at the hands of Facebook kind of folks.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
they're finding a lot of fault. And so here's a really important piece, because traditionally in organizations, particularly the key leadership, when they identify that 30%, by the way, 30% is a lot. Mm-hmm. And they're verbal, so they sort of, you know, they sort of sound bigger than they are. Key leadership begin to hear them, and they're made nervous by them. So the most common thing to do is to go in and try to, you know, make them see the light. I'm going to sit down and I'm going to explain this, and I'm going to bring them around. And what I notice again and again and again, when these two entities come together, because they have a very divergent way of thinking, they simply talk at one another, not to one another. No one's hearing. No one's listening. They're both talking. And so I think we really need to be cognizant of finding that 20% that wants to be a part of the solution. Really be looking for your most trustworthy employees, your most socially connected folks that get it, that see the vision, that are going to be a part of leading that process, and also identify that neutral place and recognize that there's a tremendous amount of influence that can come into play with that group, and really forging forward with ongoing dialogue and conversation. Because in many cases, it takes some conversation. It takes kind of that grassroots, casual conversation, not a big fancy meeting with the, you know, projected images and the like. Ongoing conversation for people to begin to understand how things are going to change and to begin to see themselves as a part of it.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So it's really very much a very positive, strengths-based focus that you're advocating.
Oh, my gosh, absolutely. I mean, you know, and that's another piece. It's a really key piece. When we look at, particularly think about this environment that we're in right now, when you talk about focusing on strengths and you recognize that we have folks that have lost positions, they're in a very vulnerable place, they want desperately to protect their families, and they're very quick to go after almost anything. And one of my friends is a vice president in a bank, and she told me in 1 week she had 4 people contact her, and they said all said the same thing. And what they said was, we'll do anything. We'll do anything. And while I really want to acknowledge someone that's willing to do anything, I have to say that if I end up, people like me, or I end up in the accounting department, we're in for a heap of trouble.
Right.
That's not going to be playing to my strengths at all. So particularly during these times, even when we feel like we're in a vulnerable place and we feel like it may be better for us to sort of cast a much wider area, that we're still going to be able to bring the best solutions and the best opportunities to the table when we're focusing on our best assets and focusing on our strengths, knowing specifically what those strengths are, identifying mm-hmm. our interests. Some people might use the word passion. It's an interesting thing. I use the words together, passion or interest, and I do that because of working with many, many individuals, and there's just some folks that are like, you know, that passion word is a little much for me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not really that kind of person, but I can identify the things that I'm interested in. I can tell you the things that are interesting to me. And then you tie the value piece in. And if I have those things front and center, and I use those items to make decisions, I always say to people, having those things front and center will allow you to know when to say yes to an opportunity and when to say no. And there are plenty of opportunities out there that are not going to be, they may be a short-term fix, but they're not going to be a long-term situation that's going to turn out favorably for the organization or for you as an individual.
Wow, that's so true. And you know, it's funny, in getting ready for the show today, and I was traveling yesterday, and you won't believe it, how many red cars and vans I saw, and I thought, my goodness, this is really getting me ready for the show to see Laura and your whole concepts unveiled today. So we're very grateful for the points that you're giving. And right now, Laura, it looks like we're going to take another short break. But please, for our listeners, come back for our final segment with our guest, Laura Goodrich. For Real Recognition Radio, this is Roy Sonneson and Max Brown reminding you to keep it real.
Find out what's happening on the Voice America Talk Radio Network by keeping up with us on Twitter. You can find us at Voice America TRN.
How do you become one of the best companies to work for? By appreciating people for who they are and recognizing them for what they do. That's real recognition. 82% of employees say that recognition or praise they receive at work motivates them to improve their performance. And companies who recognize their people outperform companies that don't by 30 to 40%. Those are real results. Become one of the best companies to work for. The Recognition Management Institute can help you get the results you need. For more information, visit realrecognition.com. That's realrecognition.com.
We're always talking business. Talk to an expert. Call now. Toll free. 866-472-5790. That's 866-472-5790. Voice America Business Network.
You're listening to Real Recognition Radio with Roy Saunderson and S. Max Brown. This is what recognition is all about, getting real results in the workplace through meaningful recognition solutions. Now, let's get back to the program. Here are Roy and Max.
Welcome back to Real Recognition Radio. Let's continue the conversation with Laura Goodrich and learn some final things on driving yourself, your team, and your organization to a positive future. Laura, as I listened to that last segment with Roy, I really enjoyed the points you're bringing out, but I also appreciate how important it is to realize this isn't a quick fix, is it? I mean, to do something like this, it's almost like there's a balance. I mean, we're going to have things in our lives that don't work well, but we know that by focusing on the things that do go well, our strengths and the things we enjoy doing, we do better and we perform better. So how do we stay on this track, and how do you help people determine what they're passionate about? How do you help people find that, well, even this weekend, my wife and I were talking about this very thing, saying, you know, you see people on American Idol that say, all I want to do ever in my life is sing. And then you hear them sing and you go, they should never sing again. Never sing again. So they might be passionate, but maybe they just don't know that they're on the wrong path. Is it possible that they think or we declare something that we're passionate about, but in fact isn't really our strength?
Oh, my gosh. I mean, of course, American Idol is a great place. And let me offer some full disclosure here. When I was a kid, I thought I was born and bred to be a vocalist. Okay. And by the time that I didn't make the eighth choir and the, 14th solo that I tried out for, it became pretty clear that was not the case, right? So life will give us course correction. And people ask this very often. They say, gosh, isn't it my job that I should let someone know that they're off track? Shouldn't I let them know that they're in a moment, an idle moment where they actually have a weakness, where they believe that they have strengths? Mm-hmm. And I do believe life does give correction. And, I have the privilege and the opportunity to speak before groups all the time, and that expresses thing that I wanted, that I was really looking for. I tried to put it towards music, but I didn't have strength there. So I really needed to redirect myself as time went on, and life experience began to steer me away from some of those things that were I clearly was not going to be successful, and toward those things where I really was going to be successful. Mm-hmm. I always tell people, it's really not your right to offer those pieces. And all you have to do is look at some very successful people. And very often they'll dig back into the archives and they'll tell you about individuals that attempted to make that redirection for them. Katie Kirk is one of those people where one of her first bosses says she has absolutely no future in broadcasting. She's completely ill-suited for it. Mm-hmm. So we have to be really cautious in listening to those people, because a lot of who's to say that one person is going to know that?
Yeah.
Right? And the other thing is that sometimes we can have visions and we can want to do things that more, let's say, maybe traditional folks may think that it's a non-viable route. And we see this very common with people that have maybe an interest in the arts. I share a story in the book, Seeing Red Cars, about Jeff Hernanko, who is a very, very successful artist today. And he was a smart kid, and he was ear-tagged for going into medicine. His family just said, oh, my gosh, you're going to become a doctor. I mean, nobody asked him if he was interested in becoming a doctor. They simply said, you're going to become a doctor, and he went through all of his pre-med, and he sat down to take his entrance exam, and he said he just this feeling in his stomach that it wasn't right, that it was not the right thing for him to do. And he began to go on a journey to figure out what really was the right equation and put together a process where he turned his father's company around, hired leaders to lead that company, so that created sort of a revenue place for him to focus on the things where his passions were, and art happened to have been an area of passion, and today he has a tremendously successful business. And, you know, his family was like, you can't become an artist because you will starve. And let me just offer, he's not starving, not anywhere around that term. He's tremendously successful. So I think we don't have the right to do that course correction because you just never know. I always think of, you know, people, and this is really common with young adults, and I think we have to be cognizant of it. It's like, you should go into accounting. I had a friend whose father said, go into accounting, you're a decent student. And for 20 years, she, and this is what she said, she sort of lived this quiet death. Like, it was just absolutely was not gratifying to her. And she finally had the courage to really focus on the things that were very interesting and aligned with her strengths, and she started a design business and has found the same and greater success in that industry that she did in accounting. Now, I don't mean to take a dig at accounting. I'm just saying that, you know, there's real power and value in gaining that clarity. And don't, you know, I've seen too many people, I've had too many people send me notes and say, you know what, I found great success in this business, in this particular area, and it didn't look like it could be profitable, but I made it so.
So, Laura, what about, I mean, because I appreciate exactly what you're saying, and I feel like those of us who get to choose what we want to do for a living and be passionate about that living, it's a rare thing. It's an opportunity. You know, you look at the conference board or other research that's come out this year around job satisfaction, and it's at an all-time low for most people. But I find as well that in a recession, or like you mentioned earlier, four people could come to your friend who said, I'll do anything, because they're looking for a job. They just need to survive. And right now, survival is where they're at. And I have a guy who actually drives my house every week and picks up my garbage, but he's one of the happiest men I know. And I think it's more about that he just loves what he gets to do because he's connected to something bigger than a paycheck. And I think this is an interesting piece. It's like DeWitt Jones said it, you know, I can do what I love, or I can love what I do. And it's almost that mental shift that you're talking about, that that perhaps it's a matter of shifting it inside of ourselves, as opposed to saying that we can all leave our jobs as an accountant to become an artist. I'm not sure. I'm just resonating with this as again, my wife and I have had this wonderful conversation this weekend about something very similar as well. Because right now I wouldn't tell my little brother to leave his job. I suggest to him, you know, to do whatever he can to pay his rent.
Yes. And a lot of times in those situations, there's a combination of things that we're doing. We're doing work that pays the rent, and we're creating some sort of creative avenues around in our spare time. It's hard to use that word because a lot of us have very little of it, but you have to be practical. And many, many people that you talk with that are really doing work that they're very interested in, they're focusing on their strengths, they had jobs prior to the one that is fully aligned with those things. And what they did on every step of the journey is they said, what am I gaining from this opportunity that's lending itself to what is next? And I think that's a really critical piece, because we don't want to advocate that people put their families in a really vulnerable situation, because we've got to be practical. And at the same time, I think to sit in misery in a position and go, oh, my gosh, this is not what I want, is not the route to go in. It's interesting. I don't know if you guys have seen the television show Undercover Boss. But we see a lot of that. To your point, Max, about the garbage person that is so joyful and has this deep joy, we're seeing on that television show, you see people in jobs that, you know, many of us would go, there's no way that a person could actually derive enjoyment out of that, and yet they do. And I think you're absolutely spot on with that. And that's where, if we get in and we're really asking the tough questions, what do you want? We're not saying, what do I want that job? I want to have a positive influence on people. Mm-hmm. And I suspect that that individual that is joyfully doing his job really, really sees himself as not getting the garbage, but helping to help people.
Creating, yeah, well, he has a positive impact on me, for sure. I mean,
right, of course
this guy's a great guy, man.
Right. He's impacting you, and I suspect that that's where he's placing his focus. So really what he wants is to influence. It's not that he wakes up and goes, I want to be a garbage man. I don't believe that that's what he's doing, and he's deriving joy out of that experience because of how he's focusing, and it really does come down to a mindset.
Yeah. Yeah, and it takes work, doesn't it? I mean, we've talked about how we can all kind of ride in and out of our highs and our lows, and that sometimes we get focused on what we shouldn't be focused on, or the negative, if you will. How long does it take, or how do you coach people, maybe in like one step, because we only have about 1 minute left before we have to close this show. What would be a concluding piece that we could offer listeners to doing this differently? That they could actually stay back on, get back on track, if you will.
Get back on track. And again, these are the folks that want to, right? So we want to make sure that we're placing that emphasis. But the folks that want to is, you know, identify some people around you that you know are going to support you and say, here's what I'm focusing on. I want to have a focus on the outcomes that I want in situations large and small, and I'm going to do that over the next 30 days. Will you help me? If we have a conversation and you hear me sort of slipping, will you give me a heads up? And I had a client, it was just that kind of situation, natural tendency, it was such a slippery slope, he let people know around him. It was about a 90-day process before he was able to even become cognizant of it happening. Not to mention turning around, aware.
Yep.
Right?
Yep. Yep. This is the work that it takes, doesn't it?
It takes a lot of work. It really does, and it takes having people around you. Very difficult to do this without others around you, particularly if your natural tendency is to focus on that fear-based thinking. Hard to do it alone.
Well, I appreciate this conversation from Roy and I both. We're grateful you would join us on the show. Could you give us just a quick link to where people could find you if they want to get more information?
Absolutely. I mean, one of the things that we didn't speak to is the fact that this isn't a see a movie and change your life, or this isn't read a book, change your life, is that we need to create that place for touch points. That's really important to us. So you can go to seeingredcarsbook.com. You can see information on the film. You can see information on the book. We created a digital toolkit that will help people create that reminder, get them back into the things that they want so that they can engage in those conversations over the course of time, because that's what it's going to take. And another really exciting development is we've developed 5 really short films, 2 to 3 minutes, that support the book, and they're now available on Amazon. And they're quick downloads, and people can use those as leaders to get folks talking about this, because it's unconscious, and it's hard, and it's going to take time. So it'll take those touch points to get us back to it.
Thank you, Laura. I've got an engineer telling me we got to close this show, but I am so grateful you'd be with us today. I know we have to wrap up now, so thanks again for being on the show. Thanks to all our listeners for listening to Real Recognition Radio. For Max Brown and Roy Saunderson, we're reminding you to keep it real. Thanks again. We'll be back next week.
Thank you again for tuning in Real Recognition Radio. Please join Roy Saunderson and Max Brown again next Tuesday at 10 a.m. Pacific Time, 1 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel for more motivational tips to help your employees perform better. We'll talk again next week.